Chapter 11. The state funeral for Emperor Ranbarun XXIII of the Third Barun Dynasty took place a few days later in the Temple of Nedra, Lion God of the Empire. The temple was a huge marble building, not far from the Imperial Palace. The altar was backed by a vast fan of pure beaten gold, with the head of a lion in its center. Directly in front of the altar stood the simple marble bier of Tenedra's father. The late emperor lay in calm repose, covered from the neck down by a cloth of gold. The column-lined inner hall of the temple was filled to overflowing as the members of the great families vied with one another, not so much to pay their respects to Ranbarun, but rather to display the opulence of their clothing and the sheer weight of their personal adornment. Geryon and Tenedra, both dressed in deepest mourning, sat beside General Varana at the front of the vast hall as the eulogies were delivered. Tholnedran politics dictated that a representative of each of the major houses should speak upon this sad occasion. The speeches, Geryon suspected, had been prepared long in advance. They were all quite flowery and tiresome, and each one seemed to be directed at the point that although Ranbarun was gone, the empire lived on. Many of the speakers seemed quite smug about that. When the eulogies had at last been completed, the white-robed high priest of Nedra, a pudgy, sweating man with a glossy, sensual mouth, arose and stepped to the front of the altar to add his own contribution. Drawing upon events in the life of Ranbarun, he delivered a lengthy homily on the advantages of having wealth and using it wisely. At first, Geryon was shocked by the high priest's choice of subject matter, but the rapt faces of the throng in the temple told him that a sermon about money was very moving to a Tholnedran congregation, and that the high priest, by selecting such a topic, was able thereby to slip in any number of laudatory comments about Tenedra's father. Once all of the tedious speeches were completed, the little emperor was laid to rest beside his wife under a marble slab in the Barun section of the catacombs beneath the temple. The so-called mourners then returned to the main temple hall to express their condolences to the bereaved family. Tenedra bore up well, though she was very pale. On one occasion she swayed slightly, and Geryon, without thinking, reached out to support her.
"Don't touch me,"
she whispered sharply under her breath, raising her chin sharply.
"What? We cannot show any sign of weakness in the presence of our enemies. I will not break down for the entertainment of the Honoths, or the Horbites, or the Vortus. My father would rise from his grave in disgust if I did."
The nobles of all of the great houses continued to file past, offering their extensive and obviously counterfeit sympathy to the sable-gowned little Raven Queen. Geryon found their half-concealed smirks contemptible and their barbed jibes disgusting. His face grew more stern and disapproving as the moments passed. His threatening presence soon dampened the enjoyment of the Grand Dukes and their ladies and their sycophants. The Tholnedrans were genuinely afraid of this tall, mysterious Aelorn monarch, who had come out of nowhere to assume Riva's throne and to shake the very earth with his footsteps. Even as they approached Tenedra to deliver their poisonous observations, his cold, grim face made them falter, and many carefully prepared impertinences went unsaid. At last, disgusted so much that even his Sindarian good manners deserted him, he placed his hand firmly on his wife's elbow. "We will leave now," he said to her in a voice which could be clearly heard by everyone in the vast temple. "The air in this place has turned a trifle rancid." Tenedra cast him one startled glance, then lifted her chin in her almost regal and imperious manner, laid her hand lightly on his arm, and walked with him toward the huge bronze doors. The silence was vast as they moved with stately pace through the throng, and a wide path opened before them.
"That was very nicely done, dear,"
Tenedra complimented him warmly as they rode in the gold-inlaid imperial carriage back toward the palace. "It seemed appropriate," he replied. "I'd reached the point where I either had to say something rather pointed or turn the whole lot of them into toads."
"My, what an enchanting thought," she exclaimed. "We could go back if you want."
When Varana arrived back at the palace an hour or so later, he was positively gloating. "Belgarian," he said with a broad grin. "You are a splendid young fellow. Do you know that? With that one word, you mortally offended virtually the entire nobility of the northern Tonedrans."
"Which word was that?"
"Rancid."
"Oh, I'm sorry about that one."
"Don't be. It perfectly describes them."
"It is a bit coarse, though."
"Not under the circumstances. It did manage to make you any number of lifelong enemies, however."
"Oh, that's all I need," Garion replied sourly. "Give me just a few more years, and I'll have enemies in all parts of the world."
"A king is not really doing his job if he does not make enemies, Belgarion. Any jackass can go through life without offending people."
"Thanks."
There had been some uncertainty about which course Varana would follow once Ranbarun was gone. His adoption by the late emperor had clearly been a ruse with very little in the way of legality to back it up. The candidates for the throne, blinded by their own lust for the imperial crown, had convinced themselves that he would merely serve as a kind of caretaker until the question of the succession had been settled in the usual fashion. The issue remained in doubt until his official coronation, which took place 2 days after Ranbarun's funeral. The gloating exultation among the contenders for the throne was almost audible when the general limped into the Temple of Nedra, dressed in his uniform rather than the traditional gold mantle which only the emperor was allowed to wear. Obviously, this man did not intend to take his elevation seriously. It might cost a bit to bribe him, but the way to the imperial palace was still open. The grins were broad as Varana, gleaming in his gold-inlaid breastplate, approached the altar. The pudgy high priest bent forward for a moment of whispered consultation. Varana replied, and the ecclesiast's face suddenly went deathly pale. Trembling violently, he opened the gold and crystal cask on the altar and removed the jewel-encrusted imperial crown. Varana's short-cropped hair was anointed with the traditional unguent, and the high priest raised the crown with shaking hands.
"I crown thee," he declared in a voice almost squeaky with fright. "I crown thee, the Emperor and Baron the 24th, Lord of Altanedra."
It took a moment for that to sink in. Then the temple was filled with howls of anguished protest as the Tolnedran nobility grasped the fact that by the choice of his imperial name, Varana was clearly announcing that he intended to keep the crown for himself. Those howls were cut off sharply as the Tolnedran legionnaires, who had quietly filed into place along the colonnade surrounding the main temple floor, drew their swords with a huge steely rasp, the gleaming swords raised in salute.
"Hail, Ranbarun!" the legions thundered. "Hail, Emperor of Tolnedra!"
And that was that. That evening, as Garion, Tenedra, and the newly crowned emperor sat together in a crimson-draped private chamber filled with the golden glow of dozens of candles, Varana exclaimed,
"Surprise is as important in politics as it is in military tactics, Belgarion. If your opponent does not know what you're going to do, there is no way that he can prepare countermeasures."
The general now openly wore the gold mantle of the emperor.
Makes sense," Garion replied, sipping at a goblet of Tolnedran wine. "Wearing your breastplate instead of the imperial mantle kept them guessing right up until the last minute. You have a peculiar notion of fun."
"We Anadils have always had a peculiar sense of humor."
"Barun, uncle?"
Zenedra corrected primly.
"What was that, dear?" "You are a Baroon now, not an Anadil, and you should start acting like one."
"Bad-tempered, you mean? That is not really in my nature."
"Zenedra can give you lessons if you like," Geryon offered, grinning fondly at his wife.
"What?"
Zenedra exclaimed indignantly, her voice going up an octave or so.
"I suppose that she could at that," Varana agreed blandly. "She has always been very good at it."
Zenedra sighed mournfully, eyeing the pair of grinning monarchs. Then her expression became artfully tragic.
"What is he poor little girl to do?"
she asked in a trembling voice.
"Here I am, maltreated and abused by both my husband and my brother."
Varana blinked.
"You know, I had not even thought of that. You are my sister now, aren't you?"
"Perhaps you are not quite as clever as I thought, brother dear,"
she purred at him.
"I know that Geryon's not quite bright, but I thought better of you."
Geryon and Varana exchanged rueful glances.
"Would you gentlemen like to play some more?"
Zenedra asked them, her eyes twinkling and a smug smile hovering about her lips. There was a light tap at the door.
"Yes," Varana said.
"Lord Morhen to see your majesty,"
the guard outside the door announced.
"Send him in, please."
The imperial chamberlain entered quietly. His face was masked by the sorrow he felt at the passing of the man he had served so long and faithfully. But he still performed his duties with the quiet efficiency that had always been his outstanding characteristic.
"Yes, Morhen."
"There's someone waiting outside, Your Majesty. She's rather notorious, so I thought I should speak to you privately before I presented her to you."
"Notorious?"
"It is the courtesan Bethra, Your Majesty," Morhen said, with a faintly embarrassed look at Zenedra. "She has been, shall we say, useful to the crown in the past. She has access to a great deal of information as a result of her professional activities, and she was a longtime friend of Ran Borun's. From time to time, she kept him advised of the activities of certain unfriendly nobles. He made arrangements for there to be a way by which she could enter the palace unnoticed, so that they could, talk, among other things."
"Why, that sly old fox.
I have never known her information to be inaccurate, Your Majesty. She says she has something very important to tell you."
"You had better bring her in, then, Morhen. With your permission, of course, dear sister," he said to Zenedra.
"Certainly,"
Zenedra agreed, her eyes afire with curiosity. When Morhen brought the woman in, she was wearing a light hooded cloak. But when, with one smooth round arm, she reached up and pushed the hood back, Geryon started slightly. He knew her. He recalled that when he and Aunt Paul and the others had been passing through Tol Hunnath during the pursuit of Zadar the Apostate and the stolen orb, this same woman had accosted Silk for a bantering exchange, and she unfastened the neck of her cloak and let it slide almost sensuously from her creamy shoulders. He saw then that she had not changed in the nearly 10 years since he had last seen her. Her lustrous blue-black hair was untouched by any hint of gray. Her startlingly beautiful face was still as smooth as a girl's, and her heavy-lidded eyes were still filled with a sultry wickedness. Her gown was of a palest lavender, and cut in such a way as to enhance, rather than conceal, the lush, almost overripe body that it enclosed. It was the kind of body that was a direct challenge to every man she met.
Geryon stared openly at her until he caught Zinedra's green eyes, agate-hard, boring into him. And he quickly looked away.
"Your Majesty,"
Bethra said in a throaty contralto as she curtsied gracefully to the new emperor.
"I would have waited a time before introducing myself, but I've heard a few things I thought you should know immediately."
"I appreciate your friendship, Lady Bethra,"
Brenna replied with exquisite courtesy. She laughed a warm, wicked laugh.
"I am not a lady, Your Majesty. Most definitely not a lady."
She made a small curtsy to Zinedra.
"Princess,"
she murmured.
"Madam?"
Zinedra responded with a faint chill in her voice and a very slight inclination of her head.
"Ah,"
Bethra said almost sadly. Then she turned back to Verana.
"Late this afternoon, I was entertaining Count Erkan and the Baron Kelbor at my establishment."
"A pair of powerful Hunnithite nobles,"
Verana explained to Geryon.
"The gentlemen from the House of Hunnith are less than pleased with Your Majesty's choice of an official name,"
Bethra continued.
"They spoke hastily and in some heat, but I think that you might want to take what they said seriously. Erkan is an unmitigated ass, all bluster and pomposity. But Baron Kelbor is not the sort to be taken lightly. At any rate, they concluded that, with the legions all around the palace, it would be unlikely that an assassin could reach you. But then Kelbor said, 'If you want to kill a snake, you cut off its tail, just behind the head. We cannot reach Verana, but we can reach his son. Without an heir, Verana's line dies with him.'"
"My son?"
"His life is in danger, Your Majesty. I thought that you should know."
"Thank you, Bethra,"
Verana replied. Then he turned to Morin.
"Send a detachment of the Third Legion to my son's house. No one is to go in or out until I have had time to make other arrangements."
"At once, Your Majesty."
"I would also like to speak with the two gentlemen from the House of Hunnith. Send some troops to invite them to the palace. Have them wait in that little room adjoining the torture chamber down in the dungeons until I have had the time to discuss this with them."
"You wouldn't,"
Zinedra gasped.
"Probably not,"
Verana admitted.
"But they do not know that, do they? Let's give them a nervous hour or two."
"I'll see to it immediately, Your Majesty,"
Morin said. He bowed and quietly left the room.
"I'm told that you knew my father,"
Zinedra said to the lushly curved woman standing in the center of the room.
"Yes, Princess. Quite well, actually. We were friends for years."
Zinedra's eyes narrowed.
"Your father was a vigorous man, Princess,"
Bethra told her calmly.
"I'm told that many people prefer not to believe that kind of thing about their parents, but it does happen now and again. I was quite fond of him, and I will miss him very much, I think."
"I don't believe you."
"Well, that is up to you, of course. My father would not have done that." "Whatever you say, Princess,"
Bethra said it with a faint smile.
You're lying,"
Zinedra snapped. A momentary glint came into Bethra's eyes.
"No, Princess, I don't lie. I might conceal the truth at times, but I never lie. Lies are too easily found out. Rand Barun and I were intimate friends, and we enjoyed each other's company in many ways."
Her look became faintly amused.
"Your upbringing has sheltered you from certain facts, Princess Zinedra. Tol Hanath is an extremely corrupt city, and I am fully at home here. Let us face this certain and blunt truth. I am a harlot, and I make no apology for that fact. The work is easy, even pleasant at times, and the pay is very good.
I am on the best of terms with some of the richest and most powerful men in the world. We talk, and they value my conversation. But when they come to my house, it is not the talk that they are interested in. The talk comes later. It was much the same when I visited your father. We did talk, princess, but it was usually later.
Sinedra's face was flaming, and her eyes were wide with shock.
No one has ever talked to me that way before, she gasped. Then it was probably overdue,
Bethra said calmly.
You are much wiser now, not happier perhaps, but wiser. Now, if you will excuse me, I should probably leave. The Honoths have spies everywhere, and I think it might not be a good idea for them to find out about this visit.
I want to thank you for the information you have just brought to me, Bethra. Let me give you something for your trouble.
That has never been necessary, Your Majesty,
she replied with an arch little smile.
Information is not what I sell. I'll go now, unless you want to talk business, of course.
She paused in the act of putting her cloak back on and gave him a very direct look.
Ah, this might not be the best time, Bethra,
Varana said, with a faintly regretful note in his voice and a quick sidelong glance at Tenedra.
Some other time then, perhaps?
She curtsied again and quietly left the room, the musky fragrance of the scent she wore lingering in the air behind her. Sinedra was still blushing furiously, and her eyes were outraged. She spun to face Geryon and Varana.
"Don't either of you dare say anything,"
she commanded.
"Not one single word."
The sad visit to Tol Hunnath ended a few days later, and Geryon and Sinedra took ship again for the voyage back to the Isle of the Winds. Though Sinedra seldom gave any outward hints of her grief, Geryon knew her well enough to understand that her father's death had hurt her deeply. Because he loved her, and was sensitive to her emotions, he treated her with a certain extra tenderness and consideration for the next several months. In mid-autumn of that year, the Ilorn kings and Queen Porin, regent of Drasnia, arrived at Riva for the traditional meeting of the Ilorn Council. The meeting had none of the urgency which had marked those meetings previously. Torak was dead. The Angoraks were convulsed by war, and a king sat upon the Riven throne. The entire affair was almost purely social. Although the kings did make some pretense at holding business sessions in the blue-draped council chamber high in the south tower of the citadel, they gravely talked about the stalemated war in southern Tol Murgos and about the troubles Varana was having with the Vordu family of northern Tol Nedra. Warned, perhaps, by the failure of the Honoths in their attempts at assassination, the Vordus decided to try secession. Shortly after Varana's coronation as Ranborun the 24th, the Vordu family declared that their Grand Duchy was no longer a part of Tol Nedra, but rather was a separate, independent kingdom. Although they had not yet decided which of their number was to ascend the throne.
Varana's going to have to move the legions against them, King Anheg declared, wiping the ale foam from his mouth with his sleeve. Otherwise, the families will secede too, and Tol Nedra will fly apart like a broken spring.
It's not really that simple, Anheg,
Queen Porin told him smoothly, turning back from the window out of which she had been watching the activity in the harbor far below. The Queen of Drasnia still wore deep mourning, and her black gown seemed to enhance her blonde loveliness.
The legions will gladly fight any foreign enemy, but Varana cannot ask them to attack their own people.
Anheg shrugged. He could bring up legions from the south. They are all Boruns or Anadils or Ranites. They wouldn't mind trampling over the Vordus.
But then the northern legions would step in to stop them. Once the legions started fighting each other, the Empire really would disintegrate.
I guess I really hadn't thought of it that way, Anheg admitted. You know, Porin, you are extremely intelligent for a woman.
And you are extremely perceptive. For a man, she replied with a sweet smile.
That's one for her side, King Kohag said quietly.
Were we keeping score? Garion asked mildly.
It helps us to keep track, sort of,
the chief of the clan chiefs of Algeria answered with a straight face. It was not until several days later that word reached Riva concerning Varana's rather novel approach to his problem with the Vorduz. A Drasnian ship sailed into the harbor one morning, and an agent of the Drasnian Intelligence Service brought a sheaf of dispatches to Queen Porin. After she read them, she entered the council chamber with a smug little smile.
"I believe we can set our minds at rest about Varana's abilities, gentlemen," she told the Aelorn kings. "He appears to have found a solution to the Vordu question."
"Oh?" Brand rumbled. "What is it?"
"My informants advise me that he has made a secret arrangement with King Coradulan of Arendia. This so-called Kingdom of Vordu has suddenly become absolutely infested with Arendish bandits, most of them in full armor, oddly enough."
"Wait a minute, Porin," Unheg interrupted. "If it is a secret arrangement, how is it that you know about it?"
The little blonde queen of Drasnia lowered her eyelids demurely.
"Why, Unheg, dear, weren't you aware of the fact that I know everything?"
"Another one for her side," King Kohag said to Garion.
"I'd say so, yes," Garion agreed.
"At any rate," the Drasnian queen continued, "there are now whole battalions of brainless young Mimbrate knights in Vordu, all posing as bandits and plundering and burning at will. The Vordus don't have what you would call an army, so they have been screaming for aid from the legions. My people managed to get their hands on a copy of Varana's reply."
She unfolded a document.
"To the government of the Kingdom of Vordu," she read. "Greetings. Your recent appeal for help came as a great surprise to me. Surely the esteemed gentlemen in Tol Vordu would not want me to violate the sovereignty of their newly established kingdom by sending Tol Nedran legions across their borders to deal with a few Arendish brigands. The maintenance of public order is the paramount responsibility of any government, and I would not dream of intruding my forces into so fundamental an area. To do so would raise grave doubts in the minds of reasonable men the world over as to the viability of your new state. I do, however, send you my best wishes in your efforts to deal with what is, after all, a strictly internal matter."
Unheg began to laugh, pounding his heavy fist on the table in his glee.
"I think that calls for a drink," he chortled.
"I think it might call for several," Garion agreed. "We can toast the efforts of the Vordus to maintain order."
"I trust you gentlemen will excuse me then," Queen Porin said. "No mere woman could ever hope to compete with the King of Aloria when it comes to really serious drinking."
"Of course, Porin," Unheg agreed magnanimously. "We will even drink your share for you."
"Oh, you're too kind," she murmured, and then withdrew.
Much of the evening that followed was lost in a hazy fog of ale fumes for Garion. He seemed to remember weaving down a corridor with Unheg on one side and Brand on the other. The three of them had their arms about one another's shoulders, and they staggered in a peculiar kind of unison. He also seemed to remember that they were singing. When he was sober, Garion never sang. That night, however, it seemed like the most natural and enjoyable thing in the world. He had not been drunk before. Aunt Paul had always disapproved of drinking, and as he did in most things, he deferred to her opinions about the matter. Thus he was totally unprepared for the way he felt the next morning. Tenedra was unsympathetic, to say the very least. Like every woman who has ever lived since the beginning of time, she smugly enjoyed her husband's suffering.
"I told you that you were drinking too much," she reminded him.
"Please don't,"
he said, holding his head between his hands.
It's your own fault,
she smirked. Just leave me alone, he begged. I'm trying to die.
Oh, I do not think you'll die, Garion. You might wish you could, but you won't.
Do you have to talk so loud?
We all just loved your singing,
she congratulated him brightly.
I actually think you invented notes that did not even exist before.
Garion groaned and once more buried his face between his trembling hands. The Elorn Council lasted for perhaps another week. It might have continued longer had not a savage autumn storm announced with a howling gale that it was time for the assembled guests to return to the mainland while the Sea of the Winds was still navigable. Not too many days later, Brand, the tall, aging Riven Warder, requested a private audience with Garion. It was raining gustily outside, and sheets of water intermittently clawed at the windows of Garion's study as the two men sat down in comfortable chairs across the table from each other.
"May I speak frankly, Belgarion?"
the big, sad-eyed man asked him.
"You know you don't have to ask me that."
"The matter at hand is a personal one. I don't want you to be offended."
"Say what you think needs to be said. I promise not to be offended."
Brand glanced out of the window at the gray sky and the wind-driven rain.
"Belgarion, it has been almost 8 years now since you married Princess Tsenedra."
Garion nodded.
"I'm not trying to intrude on your privacy, but the fact that your wife has not yet produced an heir to the throne is, after all, a state matter."
Garion pursed his lips.
"I know that you and Anheg and the others are very concerned. I think your concern is premature, though."
8 years is a long time, Belgarion. We all know how much you love your wife. We are all fond of her."
Brand smiled briefly.
"Even though she is a little difficult at times."
"Oh, you've noticed."
"We followed her willingly to the battlefield at Tulmardu, and probably would again if she asked us to. But I think we had better face the possibility that she may be barren."
"I am positive that she is not," Garion said firmly.
"Then why isn't she having children?"
Garion could not answer that.
"Belgarion, the fate of this kingdom and of all Eloria hangs on your weakest breath. There is virtually no other topic of conversation in all of the northern kingdoms."
"I didn't know that,"
Garion admitted. "Grodeg and his henchmen were virtually wiped out at Tulmardu, but there has been a resurgence of the bear cult in remote parts of Skerik, Drasnia, and Dalgeria. You knew that, didn't you?"
Garion nodded.
"And even in the cities, there are those elements that sympathize with the cult's aims and beliefs. Those people were not happy that you chose a Tolnedrin princess for your wife. Rumors are already abroad that Tsenedra's inability to have children is a sign of Balar's disapproval of your marriage to her."
"That's a superstitious bit of nonsense," Garion scoffed.
"Of course it is. But if that kind of thinking begins to take hold, it is ultimately going to have some unpleasant effects. Other elements in Elorn society, friendly to you, are very concerned about it. To put it bluntly, there's a rather widely held opinion that the time has come for you to divorce Tsenedra."
"What?"
"You do have that power, you know. The way they all see it, the best solution might be for you to put aside your barren Tolnedrin queen and take some nice, fertile Elorn girl, who will present you with babies by the dozen."
"That is absolutely out of the question," Garion replied hotly. "I won't do it. Didn't those idiots ever hear about the Accords of Omimbre? Even if I wanted to divorce Tenedra, I couldn't. Our marriage was agreed upon 500 years ago."
the Bear Cult feels that the arrangement was forced on the Elorns by Belgarath and Polgra. Since those two are loyal to Aldur, the cult feels that it might have been done without Balar's approval.
Nonsense, Geryon snapped.
There is a lot of nonsense in any religion, Belgarion. The point remains, however, that Saenedra has few friends in any part of Elon society. Even those who are friendly to you are not very fond of her. Both your enemies and your friends would like to see you divorce her. They all know how fond of her you are, so they will probably never approach you with the idea. They're likely to take a more direct action instead.
Such as?
Since they know that you cannot be persuaded to divorce her, someone may try to remove her permanently.
They wouldn't dare!
Elorns are almost as emotional as Erends are, Belgarion, and sometimes almost as thick-headed. We are all aware of it. Anheg and Kohag both urged me to warn you about this possibility, and Porin has put whole platoons of her spies to work on it, so that we will at least have some advance warning if someone starts plotting against the Queen.
And just where do you stand in this, Brand?
Belgarion. I love you as if you were my own son, and Saenedra is as dear to me as the daughter I never had. Nothing in this world would make me happier than to see the floor of that nursery next to your bedroom absolutely littered with children. But it has been 8 years. Things have reached the point where we must do something, if for no other reason than to protect that tiny, brave girl that we both love.
What can we do? Geryon asked helplessly.
You and I are only men, Geryon. How can we know why a woman does or does not have children? And that is the crux of the whole situation. I implore you, Geryon. No, I beg you. Send for Polgara. We need her advice and help. And we need it now.
After the warder had quietly left, Geryon sat for a long while staring out at the rain. All in all, he decided that it might be wiser not to tell Saenedra about the conversation. He did not want to frighten her with talk of assassins lurking in the dim corridors, and any hint that political expediency might compel consideration of a divorce would not be well received. After careful thought, he concluded that the best course would be just to keep his mouth shut and send for Aunt Paul. Unfortunately, he had forgotten something rather important. When he entered the cheery, candlelit royal apartment that evening, he wore a carefully assumed smile designed to indicate that nothing untoward had happened during the day. The frosty silence which greeted him should have warned him. Even had he missed that danger sign, he certainly should have noticed the scars on the door and the broken shards of several vases and assorted porcelain figurines that lay in the corners where they had been missed in the hasty cleanup following an explosion of some sort. The Riven King, however, sometimes tended to be slightly unobservant.
"Good evening, dear,"
he greeted his icy little wife in a cheerful voice.
"Really?
How did your day go?" She turned to regard him with a look filled with daggers.
"How can you possibly have the nerve to ask me that?"
Geryon blinked.
"Tell me, just when is it that I am to be put aside so that my lord can marry the blonde-headed brood sow who is going to replace me in the lord's bed and fill the entire citadel with litters of runny-nosed Elon brats?"
"How?
My lord appears to have forgotten the gift he chained about my neck when we were betrothed. My lord also appears to have forgotten just exactly what Beldoran's amulet can do."
"Oh," Geryon said, suddenly remembering. "Oh, my."
"Unfortunately, the amulet won't come off," Saenedra told him bitingly. "You won't be able to give it to your next wife unless you plan to have my head cut off so that you can reclaim it."
"Will you stop that?"
as my lord commands me? Did you plan to ship me back to Tolnedra? Or am I just to be shoved out the front gate into the rain and left to fend for myself?
You heard the discussion I had with Bran, then, I take it.
Obviously.
If you heard part of it, then I am sure you heard it all. Brand was only reporting a danger to you caused by the absurd notions of a group of frothing fanatics.
You should not have even listened to him.
When he's trying to warn me that somebody might attempt to kill you?
Tenedra, be serious. The thought is there now, Geryon,
she said accusingly.
Now you know that you can get rid of me any time you want. I've seen you augment those empty-headed Aelon girls with their long blonde braids and their overdeveloped bosoms. Now's your chance, Geryon. Which one will you choose?
Are you about finished with all of this? Her eyes narrowed.
I see. Now I'm not merely barren. I'm also hysterical.
No, you're just a little silly now and then, that's all.
Silly?
Everybody's silly once in a while. He added quite calmly. It's part of being human. I'm actually a little surprised that you aren't throwing things. She threw a quick, guilty glance in the direction of some of the broken fragments in the corner. Oh, he said, catching the glance. You did that earlier, I see. I'm glad I missed that part. It's hard to try to reason with somebody when you're dodging flying crockery and the other person is shrieking curses. Tenedra blushed slightly. You did that, too? He asked mildly. Sometimes I wonder where you managed to pick up all of those words. How did you ever find out what they mean?
You swear all the time, she accused.
I know. It's terribly unfair. I am allowed to, but you're not.
I would like to know who made up that rule,
she started, and then her eyes narrowed.
You're trying to change the subject.
No, Tenedra. I already did. We weren't getting anywhere with the other topic. You are not barren, and I am not going to divorce you. No matter how long somebody else's braids are, or how... Well, never mind. She looked at him.
Oh, Geryon, what if I am?
She said in a small voice.
Barren, I mean...
That's absurd, Tenedra. We won't even discuss that. The lingering doubt in the eyes of the Riven Queen, however, said quite clearly that, even if they did not discuss it, she would continue to worry about it.